All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are talking about the 2018 Atlanta Falcons undrafted class, focusing on the trenches, offensive linemen, and defensive linemen.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman, founder of FalcFans.com, one of the longest-running Falcon websites on the internet, and of course, the host of this Locked On Falcons podcast. You can find me on Twitter at FalcFans, tweeting up a storm. Not so much these last couple of days, just because I like to take breaks on the weekends. But we are back on a Tuesday. Sorry for not putting up anything on a Monday. To do one of these quote-unquote filler episodes where we talk about the undrafted free agent class, where when I don't really have anything else to talk about in regards to the Falcons, I was going to sit down and share my thoughts about sort of the, in my opinion, extreme sort of reactions to the Julio Jones drama. You have the initial backlash that, from my perspective at least, has been relatively minor. Maybe I'm just not running in the right circles out there on the interwebs to hear the overwhelming amount of backlash. But it seems like there has been a backlash to that backlash, which I think has sort of equally gotten out of hand to a certain extent. If people want to be critical of Julio Jones, then let them. Like, it's not a big deal. But it is what it is. But instead of doing 20 minutes talking about that, because that's 20 minutes too long, in my opinion, of talking about Julio Jones, let's spend 30 minutes talking about these undrafted free agents that the Falcons have added this offseason along the offensive line and defensive line. So let's kick things off with the offensive linemen. The Falcons signed three offensive linemen in undrafted free agency, which is a relatively small amount compared to most years. But that's because the Falcons have retained a large number of guys from last year, given some of the flux that they underwent with their depth. I think because of that reason, none of these guys are really great bets to make the roster, but certainly I think are good bets that potentially one or two of them might wind up on the practice squad, just because the Falcons always want to have at least somebody developmental on the roster in addition to the guys that they had last year. Let's start off talking about the center from Alabama, J.C. Hassenauer. He was a four-star prospect, I believe, the top-rated center according to certain recruiting services coming out of high school in Minnesota, went to Alabama for obvious reasons. Never really saw the field there. Got three late starts this past season at guard when the injuries sort of affected that Bama offensive line, and got some opportunities to see the field, particularly in the national title game. That was really the only game I really sat down and watched of his, and I didn't really watch the whole game. I just watched maybe like a quarter of that game. I don't feel like you need to sit down and watch 70 snaps of offensive linemen to get an idea of what they can do. I thought I saw some positive things. I saw some athleticism, some ability to make those blocks on the second level. Presumably, he'll play more of a center role here in Atlanta. That was the role that he was a backup for Alabama for the brunt of his career until injuries forced him in at guard. But that flexibility to play some guard, I think, does give him a shot. You do wonder, because of the fact that he was a highly touted high school prospect that never really got the opportunity on the field in Alabama, if there is some untapped potential there, and again, based off of limited sample size, I think there might be there. And so he's a guy I think is a prime candidate potentially to land the practice squad spot. I think the Falcons have a little too much bodies at that center guard position to think he's more than a long shot to make the roster, but you never know. We'll touch upon maybe some of these guys' chances a little bit later on. Let's move ahead and talk about Salesi Uhatefe. I think I got that name right. We talked about him a little bit on the previous fan talk we did with Andy Gallagher, probably like 2-3 weeks ago. And, he is a guy that, from a size standpoint, you see some sort of mauling ability with him. He'll flash that. But the thing that, there was probably one cut up I saw of his on YouTube where, like, the first snap, he really did a good job executing this down block and really getting after a guy. But then, like, the more you watched of it, the more you saw his limitations be a little bit more exposed. And I think, some of the things I wrote down in my notes was, like, he's a waistbender. He needs to improve his hands. He's not great in pass protection. You know, I think I sort of summed him up as he's a mauler that doesn't really create a lot of movement off the line of scrimmage, which is kind of not good. But I think looking at this trio of offensive line prospects, he's probably the least intriguing of the guys. But given that he's actually played at a relatively high level of competition at Utah, he's probably the most, I wouldn't say polished, but at least the most experienced of the group. So that may play into his favor a little bit. We've seen him play at a high level, at a high level school. Now, granted, Haas and I were working against the second team defensive line at Alabama is like probably working against, you know, the all conference team in certain conferences. Elsewhere. So it's not to say that Hassenauer hasn't gotten his work in over the last 4 years, even as a backup. But yeah, I think, you know, maybe that plays into Uha Tefi's favor, but we'll see how that plays out. Let's move on with Matt Gono. He's probably the big name. He's probably the most intriguing guy to a lot of people, largely due to his athleticism that really jumped off the screen. When I watched him going against the lower level of competition he was facing at Wesleyan, what school? Was it Wesley or Wesleyan? It doesn't matter. It was Division II, Division III, whatever. It doesn't really matter to me. It's all the same to me. His athleticism really did jump off the screen. I did watch him in one of the All-Star games. I can't remember which. Maybe the Tropical Bowl. Maybe the East-West Shrine game. I can't remember what it was. He looked athletic, but I think he sort of didn't necessarily pop in the same way that he did going up against those Division II / Division III guys, wherever it was. You know, he also got some work at guard in that game. He didn't look quite as good. I know he's been projected mostly as a guard in the NFL by a lot of places, but I do expect him to play spend the brunt of his time as an offensive tackle with the Falcons. I think given that the Falcons play this outside zone scheme, given his length, and he has just enough height, like 6'4", I think he is, where you can envision him as a tackle, and it makes a lot of sense to play him at tackle because he didn't look quite as good as a guard as he did at tackle. It's a lot more natural there. You know, I like his footwork. I think he needs to work on his punch. I think, you know, my notes say he has the footwork to stay in front of speed but needs to work on his hands. And watching him try to execute that punch, it seemed like his right arm was his more of his power hand. So you can make a case that maybe he might be a little bit more natural as a right tackle in the NFL than he is as a left tackle. But we'll see how that plays out. That's just something to keep an eye on. I think with Gono, while I think he's got tools that make him a worthwhile developmental option, I feel like a little bit of hype has been pushing him like he's going to come in right away and be this star. And I think he's a little raw. Is it more raw or rawer? Let's say more raw because that sounds less weird when I say it. More raw than I think a lot of people are making it out to be. I think he has a lot of talent. But he does seem like in the sort of classic way of these undrafted free agents, when you look at most of these guys, it takes them for the most part, and there are obvious exceptions, like Jason Peters, including, you know, Lyle Collins and Ryan Schrader as well, that it usually takes most of those guys the better part of 3 years before they really sort of are good enough to see the field and or good enough that when they do see the field, they're able to keep their potential starting jobs. So I don't expect Gano or Gono or however you want to say his name to do much in the immediate future. I think if you're hoping – the hope for him, I think, is that you're – I wouldn't necessarily make the comparison to Ryan Schrader because I think there are similarities but not quite the same in terms of their playing style. I think Chris Hubbard, who just recently played for the Steelers and now got signed for the Browns, is going to be their right tackle, is probably a better comparison just from an athletic standpoint. I think Gunn is going to be interesting because – I think one of the reasons why a guy like Schrader in particular was able to succeed was of opportunity. And I think Schrader had an opportunity, I think in large part thanks to the fact that the Falcons had made decisions that offseason when they signed Schrader in 2013 to hitch their wagons to Sam Baker and Lamar Holmes. And I think if Schrader had joined the team even just 1 year earlier or a year later, you know, you can make an argument, and again, you know, the whole butterfly effect, how it affects you, you can make spend hours arguing this, but you can make an argument that he wouldn't be in the position that he is in today had he been added a year earlier or a year later than that, because the Falcons may have made other decisions based off of those things. And I think the difference between Gano and Schrader and those people that are like, well, he's got, you know, he could be the next Ryan Schrader. Like, he could be. I wouldn't bet on it, but like, I would certainly say of the offensive tackles that we've signed over the years, he is one of the more naturally gifted ones. But I do think, you know, the difference between him is one hopes that he won't have quite the opportunity that Schrader had, because you don't expect Jake Matthews and or Ryan Schrader to fall into sort of the same situation that the Falcons went into when they sort of went down the Baker Holmes road. So I think Gano will be a nice developmental option. Hopefully he gets the time to develop here in Atlanta. I think if you're right now, if I'm being optimistic about his future, I don't necessarily see him as a future starter, but I certainly could see him turning into a future swing tackle, similar to Chris Hubbard, who then wound up starting in his fourth year in his contract year, played well, and then landed a starting gig elsewhere when he signed a free agent contract with the Browns. And I think that's sort of a much more sort of realistic and impossible path for Gano than necessarily being the player that I think I've seen some people mention this, where it's like, oh, well, you know, they could be thinking about turning the keys over to Gano in 2019 because they could cut Schrader. You know, like, it's like, I don't know about that. That seems like going a little bit too far with that, but we'll see how that goes. We'll talk a little bit about sort of how some of these guys can wind up making the team in a bit. But of course, I want to plug New Bias Fullborn's Locked on Braves podcast. We are talking football in this podcast, but soon there will be very little football. There is no football to talk about, and there'll just be baseball to talk about. And so you can check out Locked on Braves, part of the Locked on Podcast Network, your team every day. So let's talk about, we talked about this on the previous episode when we talked about the offensive skill positions, but sort of how the Falcons construct their roster. They have the potential option to keep a 10th offensive lineman as their potential, quote unquote, as I call it, the grab bag position. And for those of you that missed that episode, basically the Falcons, assuming the Falcons keep 25 offensive players on their 53-man roster, that last spot, that 25th spot, is basically for the offensive player that is, quote unquote, the best player available. It can be any number of positions and potentially could be a 10th offensive lineman if you assume that the 9 offensive linemen that they have normally kept as part of the 24. I think between these undrafted free agents, Hassenauer and Gano have a slim but not a completely long shot chance of being that 25th spot, and similar to what we saw with guys like Schrader and hashtag Team James Stone, I will never quit it. In past years where the Falcons sort of look at those guys based off of their performance in camp and say, these guys are way too valuable to let go, especially since good young offensive linemen are hard to come by, harder to come by today than they have been in past years. And especially for a team where 80% of their starting offensive line is on the wrong side of 30. Their top utility backup on the inside is in Ben Garland is 30, and their swing tackle is none other than the incomparable Ty Sambrelo. And so throwing away any quasi-talented young offensive line prospect is not a particularly smart move. So I could see the Falcons keeping a 10th guy if one of these guys has that level of camp. I think when we talk about the 9 offensive linemen who are potentially going to make the team, you know, we know who the 5 starters are going to be. We assume Schweitzer is going to, and Garland are pretty much locks to be, you know, OOL 6 and 7. Even though one of those guys is probably going to be inactive on game day. We probably think Sean Harlow is pretty safe, not a lock, but pretty safe, if for no other reason than the fact that he was a 4th-round pick. But, even you know, he should show improvement this year. And particularly it would be interesting, and we touched upon this in previous episodes, if he gets a longer look at center this year, this summer, potentially as a heir apparent to Ben Garland in that utility backup role, where he can sort of be in the mix to be a future starter at guard or center, in, you know, whichever becomes available first. But, you know, Garland is a free agent, is one of those players on the wrong side of 30. And, you know, the Falcons may be looking for a utility guy in 2019. And I think between Harlow and Schweitzer, you know, I think Harlow, it makes a lot of sense for the Falcons to see if Harlow can do that this summer before making any decisions next year. But that real battle along the offensive line is going to be for that ninth offensive line spot, which is going to be that swing tackle. You know, it probably is going to boil down to Ty Sambrello versus Austin Pastor. I think it's a toss-up at this point. I don't really think that just because the Falcons gave up a fifth-round pick for Ty Sambrello means that he's, you know, ahead in any regard. I think it's more that was more a reflection of at the time they were very desperate for a competent NFL experienced tackle, and it doesn't necessarily have ramifications in 2018 for decisions that they made, you know, a year ago. I think the best man can win the job, and I think, you know, basically it's a toss-up at this point. I think probably the best possible pathway for a 10th offensive lineman to make the team is to be the other offensive tackle, and so the Falcons keep two backup tackles in that case. That could be both Pastor and Sambrello make the team. I think it could be one of those guys making the team, and then the Falcons keeping someone like Gano or my boy from last summer, Daniel Brunskill. I think we'll have to see. I think the offensive tackle position, you know, particularly that swing tackle position, is going to be one of the few spots on offense, at least, that is actual competitive this summer because guys are actually competing for roster spots. I think when you look at the Falcons roster, current offensive roster construction, you can make a very strong case that 22 out of those 25 spots are pretty much filled and settled. Obviously, injuries could affect things. There could be a surprise here or there, but I think those last three spots are the fullback, the swing tackle, and whoever wins that grab bag position. So, you know, we have basically three spots available on the offensive side of the ball where guys can really sort of compete for that. I think, you know, as I said earlier, I think Hasenauer and Gano have outside shots to win that grab bag position. Uhatefi, I think, would be a fairly unexpected surprise, but I don't think it's completely out of the realm of possibilities. So we'll see how that goes. Now, before we move on and talk about the defensive line, I do want to plug LockedOnSports.com, your one-stop hub for the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find content, podcasts, and written content for NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball teams, your team every day. So let's talk about the defensive line. And, you know, again, not a huge number of guys that the Falcons brought in, but that really hasn't been the case the last couple of off seasons where they haven't been signing a whole bunch of defensive linemen just because they've had so many veterans like Courtney Upshaw and Brooks Reed and all these other guys that, you know, sort of are entrenched in key reserve spots. Not so much the case this year in comparison to previous years. So you would think this gives some of these younger guys maybe a better chance of making the team this summer than as we've seen in previous years. And that is technically the case. I think of these guys, it sort of really stands out to me. John Cunningham was one of the more interesting players that I watched. I talked about this with Andy on the previous episode. I liked his explosiveness. I liked his power. He was sort of reminiscent of a poor man's Dejan Sinat when I watched him. He needs work. He certainly needs refinement. But I think there are tools that are definitely worth developing there. I don't think his height is really an issue. I think given that the Falcons have shown you know, no problem taking guys like Grady Jarrett and Dejan Sinat and drafting those guys reasonably and investing reasonably high draft picks in those guys. I know Jarrett's, you know, a fifth-round pick, and that's not ever considered a high pick, but obviously they're about to pay this dude a whole bunch of money in the next 6 to 8 months. So clearly they're not afraid of investing in short D tackles. I don't think it's going to be as big a deterrent for Cunningham. I think we talked about this with the Mo Hurst episode that I did with Ted Nguyen. I think height is kind of overrated when it comes to defensive tackles, but we'll sort of see what Cunningham can do. I think he's probably more likely to be a practice squad guy than a guy that has a legit shot of making the roster as the ninth or 10th defensive lineman if the Falcons choose to keep that many. I'm pretty confident they'll keep 9, 10 I think, remains a question mark. I'm not necessarily expecting them to keep 10 guys, but we'll see. Moving on to the ends, we have Jacob Tuioti Mariner from UCLA and McKendie Cheridor from Georgia State. It's interesting because Tuioti Mariner was initially listed as a D tackle when the Falcons, announced their undrafted free agent signings. And, you know, what's interesting about that is he played extensively as an end at UCLA, but in the All-Star game he played, and again, I think it might have been a Tropical Bowl, he played pretty much exclusively as a D-tackle. And he didn't look particularly good at that D-tackle spot, but that was probably the first time he had played D-tackle, you know, in 4 years. So it's understandable that he didn't necessarily take to that position really well. I think he's better suited to play a five-tech than inside. I wasn't really that impressed with him as a pass rusher or as a run defender. You know, I think he's probably better suited to play the run in the NFL than he is as a pass rusher, but I don't necessarily see him as a guy that was a high level run defender. But again, you know, he could wind up looking better in camp than I saw in the brief watching I did of his, this past season. He seems like more of a motor guy. I think motor can go a long way when it comes to guys filling out practice squad spots. I don't think it's as big a factor as it probably was, as big a factor under DQ as it probably was under Mike Smith, but we'll see how it goes. I think the thing that Tuioti Mariner has going for him is that potential versatility to play both inside and outside, and so that possibility of being able to fill two backup roles for the price of one is meaningful, is valuable to this coaching staff. So maybe that's his best avenue, but he didn't necessarily show enough skill at either of those positions that really stood out to me. You have Cheridor. I think Cheridor of these two guys is the guy that has a little bit more potential, particularly as a pass rusher. I think the one real knock on Cheridor is the durability or lack thereof that he showed at Georgia State. It seemed like he was pretty much injured every year, missed time every single season. But I think due to his size, his length, his athleticism, you know, he's not necessarily a monster in any of those three areas, but he checks all three of those boxes, at least as far as the NFL skill set goes. And I think because of that, he's probably a little bit more upside that's worth developing. I think, you know, the type of player that you're kind of hoping he could be is a poor man's Derek Shelby, but more of what Derek Shelby was in Miami than what he has been in Atlanta, where I think the Falcons kind of ruined him as a pass rusher to a certain extent because they sort of asked him to bulk up and be more of an interior guy when we signed him a year ago. But I think if Cheridor does develop, it's a couple of years away. It's a year or two on the practice squad. And the big question is he going to be durable enough to get that type of development over the next year or two to sort of live up to that potential? And generally speaking, if guys are injury prone in college, they often don't suddenly become durable and healthy in the pros. Obviously, it's not a one-to-one correspondence, but in general, I wouldn't necessarily, it's a safe bet to expect him to stay healthy, but we'll see. You never know. The last player I want to touch upon before we wrap this thing up is Anthony Winbush. I think it'll be interesting to see where Winbush plays this summer. Right now, I'm sort of assuming that he's going to play more of a Sam linebacker role than he does as a defensive end, but he was certainly known for his pass rushing ability in college, and it wouldn't completely shock me if the Falcons tried him as a defensive end, even though I don't necessarily think that's his best position. His listed weight, you know, what he was at his pro day was like 6'1", 250, and that's about the same size as JT Jones. That's not far off of what Vic Beasley was or even Tack McKinley was when the Falcons signed him. So clearly the Falcons aren't afraid to have undersized edge rushers on their roster. But I think the difference between Winbush is much more similarly to a Vic Beasley than guys like Jones and Tack. When Winbush was a sophomore, he was like 210 pounds or 215 pounds, as opposed to those other guys who were closer to that 240 plus range, even as youngsters. And there's a difference between, you know, being 210 and then bulking up to 250 versus being 240 and then bulking up to 250, as I'm sure most of you can guess. And I think you can make an argument because of that, 250 might be the upper limit of Winbush's size. And I think given watching him play and sort of seeing how he plays and how he rushes the quarterback. I think similar to what we saw with Vic Beasley in his rookie year when he was playing extensively as a defensive end, particularly in base downs. Obviously, he still plays as a defensive end in nickel situations. But I think Wimbush is going to get pushed around. And I think like we saw with Beasley, where it was like, yeah, you know, he can play defensive end, but he's, you know, his game is built more like a linebacker. And I think that's really what Wimbush is. And we've seen in past years where the Falcons have taken these linebackers like a Beasley, like a Tyler Starr, among others, and Philip Wheeler did this as well, where they have these Sam linebackers that in nickel situations will put their hand in the dirt and rush the quarterback. And I think that's really what Wimbush is. That's what Beasley should be. We've talked quite a bit about the reasons and why he's not, but you know, that's the podcast for another day. I think that's really what Wimbush is. And I think that's, you know, long-term at least, that's where his better position is going to be. I just don't see him being able to hold up full-time as a defensive end, playing with his hand in the dirt. It'll be interesting because I think, you know, obviously Beasley's able to get away with being a nickel-only pass rusher, which I think is really ideal for what Wimbush is. Beasley's able to get away with that due to his draft status and sort of his pass production. Wimbush was very productive this past year at Ball State, but he doesn't come in with the pedigree, and the Falcons have no reason to be married to getting the most out of Anthony Wimbush as they do with Vic Beasley. And so he's going to, unlike Beasley, doesn't really have a position in the base defense, Wimbush is going to have to find one. And as I've been explaining, I do think linebacker is the better option for him. But obviously, I do think his pass rushing ability is going to be his greatest strength. So it'll be interesting to see if the Falcons do simply, you know, we'll just put him at defensive end because we really want to maximize and develop his pass rush as opposed to trying to find him a niche to make the roster. But I think the interesting thing is now that Beasley has sort of moved from linebacker, and it'll be interesting to see if the Falcons even give Beasley any snaps at linebacker in the preseason as they have done in the last 2 years. Not many snaps, but some snaps. If they're sort of adamant that his time as a linebacker is done, you would then assume that they're not even going to waste his time giving him, you know, first quarter, second quarter reps at linebacker as they've done in the last 2 summers. And with that in mind, the Falcons really don't have a backup for Devondre Campbell at the same linebacker spot. And as we saw a year ago when they picked up Jordan Tripp, you know, he was basically brought in to play special teams and to play, be their sort of emergency backup same linebacker in the event of an injury there, or at least another option there, because, you know, then they had Beasley. But if you're taking Beasley out of the equation, what happens if Campbell gets hurt? Well, if you're committed to not giving Beasley linebacker snaps, you need somebody on the team. And I think Wimbush makes a lot of sense there. And so I think his best avenue of making the team is actually as a linebacker, as opposed to a defensive end, where I just don't see him leapfrogging anybody. But again, you know, if he shows his ability as a pass rusher, that will certainly get people excited, as we saw last year with guys like Chris Odom and JT Jones. So it'll be interesting to see how Wimbush plays. We'll talk about him a little bit more in a future episode when we talk about the linebackers, as well as the rest of the quote-unquote true off-ball linebackers the Falcons have signed, as well as the defensive backs they picked up in a future episode. Appreciate you guys tuning in today. We'll have fan talk sometime in the next week or so, and we'll start getting some guests to do some NFC South and AFC North off-season reviews and season previews as well. So that's on deck. And if, in the meantime, if you want to get in contact with me, you can check me out on FalcFans, on Twitter at FalcFans. If it's podcast-related, just let me know in the tweet. If it is podcast-related, just go ahead and send it over to Locked On Falcons. That is the show's Twitter handle. Of course, you can find us on Facebook at Locked On Falcons. You can email us at LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. And, of course, you can leave a comment at LockedOnFalcons.com and FalcFans.com, where the show is posted daily. So, I appreciate you guys tuning in and listening for another day, another dollar. So we'll be back later this week to talk more Falcons, maybe some more free undrafted free agents, if there's nothing else to talk about. And we'll try to limit the amount of Julio Jones drama that we indulge in on this podcast, because I don't want to become what I just earlier talked about sort of becoming. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.